You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Anchor is a Spotify-owned company that makes it easy for people to get into podcasting. It's an all-in-one, totally free platform where you can record a podcast, host it, distribute it, measure your performance analytics, and find sponsors. It all works in your web browser or through Anchor's mobile app. Give Anchor a try for free at anchor.fm/kickassnews. That's anchor.fm/kickassnews. And now, on with the show. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis. Welcome to Kick-Ass News. Folks, I'm going to let you in on a little secret about me today. I am absolutely, completely terrified of snakes. Growing up in Texas, we had just about every kind of poisonous snake you can find in North America, crawling through the yard, climbing up trees, and popping out of wood piles, from copperheads to coral snakes to rattlesnakes. And while my dad could go right up to a snake and decapitate it with a shovel like it was nothing, the length of a yard tool just isn't nearly enough distance for my comfort. Wasn't then, isn't now, and probably never will be. So my hat's off to my two guests today, who are far braver men than me and handled live snakes for their new movie, Them That Follow. In Them That Follow, Walton Goggins plays the leader of a Pentecostal snake handler church deep in the Appalachians, and Jim Gaffigan plays one of his followers who has a crisis of faith when his own son's life hangs in the balance after getting bit by a deadly rattlesnake. Today I'll talk with Jim and Walton about getting over their fears, working with a snake for a scene partner, and the terrifying moment when a snake lunged at Walton Goggins. Walton talks about the biblical verse that inspired believers to take up poisonous serpents, why members of this Pentecostal sect live in fear of the law, and why he took particular care not to exploit them or reinforce negative stereotypes about people living in rural Appalachia. We talk about what attracts him to religious roles, from The Apostle to Them That Follow to HBO's The Righteous Gemstones, and how he manages to move so effortlessly between drama and comedy. Then, Jim Gaffigan discusses his own transition from comedy to drama, how his acting and stand-up inform each other, and what it's been like hitting the film festival circuit with 9 movies over the past year. He talks about how Them That Follow addresses issues of religious freedom, free will, and public safety, and how his experience as a devout Catholic informed his own portrayal. Plus, we talk about his upcoming stand-up special for Amazon, his wife Jeannie's recovery from a brain tumor, and how it inspired him to get more personal in his act. Coming up with Jim Gaffigan and Walton Goggins in just a moment. Walton Goggins is best known for his memorable roles in Sons of Anarchy, Justified, The Hateful Eight, Vice Principals, Django Unchained, Ant-Man and the Wasp, and Tomb Raider, among others. Now he plays a preacher at a Pentecostal snake handler church deep in the Appalachians in Them That Follow. Walton Goggins, welcome.
Nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, I have to ask, what was your initial reaction when your agent called and said, hey, we got some guys here who want you to play a Pentecostal snake handler.
I said yes immediately. No, I you know, like everybody else, I read the story, and when I got to the last page, was, you know, had tears, with tears in my eyes, called called my people and said, yes, I want to be a part of this, and I want to meet the people that wrote this story. You know, I'm from Georgia. I'm from a little town outside of Atlanta, not rural South, but you know, it was a more rural environment than I've lived in the last 30 years being here in Los Angeles, and I couldn't believe how sensitive these writers and directors were about this material, how even-handed they were. And their depiction of this community.
Yeah, throughout your career, you've made a particular effort to avoid roles that reinforced negative stereotypes about Southerners. Did you take a similar care when portraying people of the rural Appalachians?
Yeah, I think we all did. But for me, to add to what you just said, I don't think it's just about the South. I think it's the transgender community playing Venus Van Damme. I think it's, you know, really kind of anybody that I've had an opportunity to really have some freedom, you know, to collaborate and to bring, you know, my own interpretation of it. That has at the foremost of my thinking and my approach, and as is all of the actors that I really respect, that I look up to.
And this is not the first time that you've played, I guess, a religious fundamentalist. One of your big breakout roles was as a religious convert in Robert Duvall's brilliant film, The Apostle. And then, of course, you're now reuniting with Danny McBride for HBO's upcoming limited series, The Righteous Gemstones, in which you play, quote, a former child star who clogged and sang for Jesus. What attracts you to these kind of stories about, I don't want to call it religious fanaticism, but religious fundamentalism?
You know, I don't know. I had the opportunity to play the apostle when I was 24 years old and to work with the person that influenced me more than any other actor out there, Robert Duvall.
Really?
And he became a real mentor of mine, and really kind of was my guiding star, if you will, for the career that I wanted and the actor that I wanted to become. And I'm still trying to just be a thread in his waistcoat. Yeah. But you know, it's funny that you bring that up. The Apostle, because when I read the script that Britt and Daniel wrote, for me, in some ways, it was coming full circle back to that experience. The character that I played in that story was, his name was Sammy, and he was the right-hand man of the Apostle, played by Robert Duvall. And in some ways, I felt that he would have grown up, he would have matured in a way that this would have been the path that he would have taken, that he would have taken the experience that he had with the apostle and moved to a smaller town up north and started a church, a Pentecostal church. Huh. You know, it was a Pentecostal church that Bobby wrote in The Apostle. And so this would be the next...
This is extreme Pentecostalism.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the next step in his process.
Yeah, and for anyone who might know, this is a real thing. There are churches in the Appalachians, West Virginia, places like Kentucky, where people handle rattlesnakes and in some cases drink strychnine to prove their faith in God. Do you know what the specific belief behind that is?
It's a passage in the Bible. You know, and this isn't some cult. This practice has been going on for 125 years.
Yeah,
this is just a literal interpretation of a passage in the Bible, and it's Mark 16, 17, and 18, and it says, "Signs will follow them that believe. In my name shall you cast out devils." You shall speak with new tongues. You shall take up serpents. And if you drink any deadly thing, it will not harm you. Huh. And this community, this small marginalized community, interprets that verse that is kind of the center of their faith, literally. And they don't arbitrarily pick up snakes every single time they congregate. It is when they feel the Spirit of God within them.
Interesting.
And it is a way of showing their devotion to God.
Wow.
And whether you agree with it or whether you disagree with it, I think that we should all endeavor to at least understand it so that we have an informed opinion about it.
Now, are you comfortable picking up snakes?
No, I am. I am I'm more scared of snakes than I am anything else in my life.
Really? Me too.
No, like, yeah, for real. Okay, so then you know that phobia. For me, it's pathological.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is a big challenge for
you. Yeah, I mean, I'll wear a snake, like knee-high snake boots, just walk into the bathroom. No, it's I'm really scared of them. And it was a very big deal kind of on this movie. I knew that it was part of it. You know, it's there. It's in the script. I just never really thought that it was going to happen for some reason.
Do you think there would be rubber snakes?
Like
or
rubber snakes or CGI until
yeah, exactly.
And I sat down and kind of talked with Britt Poulton and Daniel Savage, our writer directors, and they said, no, this is what we're going to do. They won't be poisonous and they won't have teeth, you know, or they won't be able to bite you. Uh-huh. But no, they're going to be real.
But somewhere I heard that you did get bit.
You know, it's funny because I said this and the cast said, you know, says that didn't happen. I don't know what the fuck they're talking about. It was just one other person there and it was Alice. And it was at the end of two, you know, 15-hour days. And I turn myself over to an imaginary set of circumstances. I just pretend to be someone else. It's not that complicated. And in this particular moment, I was tired. And I think Daniel yelled action and I just was still Walton and I'm walking over to a cage filled with snakes thinking, what are you doing, man? Why are you walking over to a cage filled with snakes? Come on, Walton, you don't have to put your hand in there. You don't have to pick up oh my God, there's a snake in your hand right now. And the snake felt that fear and reared back and struck at my hand. He didn't have any teeth.
Oh, okay.
Like it didn't.
Okay,
it wasn't
still, that's
like
terrifying.
It was just. It was scary to have that happen. Yeah. I dropped the snake, and it really freaked me out.
Yeah.
And the snake handler came over and picked it up, and everything was okay. It was not a problem. It was never going to be a problem.
Okay.
But still, it was the fear of them. You know, which is real. And my wife and I read an interesting article about why has the snake been cast in that role. You know, for so long in human evolution, you know, it has been the villain, you know, in origin stories or, you know, across the world. And this article equated it to, their movements being so unpredictable, to human beings. You can't make sense sense out of it. Therefore it is so. Aside from the fact that they can kill you, some of them that are poisonous, you know, plants can kill you. Well, I'm not afraid of them,
right?
But it is their movement.
Yeah, and they're also just a very foreign creature. I mean, even fish and birds and lizards have legs and arms. But a snake is something totally abstract for human beings, I would think.
Yeah.
Well, that's a heavy price to pay for breaking character, I have to say.
Yeah. It was, but you know, what a on the other side of it, what a great experience to have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I wonder, what do you think draws your character to this fringe religion? Do you think that he was raised in that world or was he born again?
You know, I think that he is a man who, and it's alluded to in the story, who was troubled. Mm-hmm. And I feel like on some level he was violent. Not to the people around him, not to his immediate family or anything, but I think that he had a real anger issues, and he had a wife who struggled with addiction, and that will level a person, you know, that kind of pain, and more often than not, that's turning to God in those instances is par for the course, you know, for a lot of people. And I think in this particular instance for Lemuel Childs, God saved him, you know, and therefore he takes this practice and this belief, as life or death.
Yeah.
And I think it's also, it is very black and white, but it's also black and white for the members of this community, until it's not, Mm-hmm. And what is that line? We know what the line would be for the two of us. We would never be in that situation. But for them, they have to ask themselves the ultimate question. And do you atone for your sins if it is, a member of your family, the way in which, we preach every Sunday morning?
Yeah, and I have to imagine for someone who's been through what he's been, having a wife who's dealt with addiction and all that. I mean, going to a philosophy that's very black and white, where if something bad happens, it's Satan behind it and so forth, maybe that might feel very liberating. I mean, we would probably all like to have things be that simple in our lives.
I agree. I think we're all looking for parameters, mm-hmm. and ways to make sense of the world around us. I mean, that's why we, one of the reasons why we've adhered to religion since the very beginning. And, for myself, I feel at times being secular and having looked for answers all over the world, and I, like a number of other people, have a passel of beliefs that have been collected through reading various texts for the last 30 years of my life. But I at times don't have the answers that I wish that I did, that maybe Lemuel does or other people in that community have when I'm talking to my child. And that is, I envy it, I do. Yeah. I envy that conviction.
Yeah, and it's hard not to have the answers.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard to admit it.
Yeah. Certainly. Yeah. It really is.
And because this practice of handling serpents is actually illegal in, I think, 49 of the 50 states, I want to say that West Virginia is the one that is not illegal.
Really? Yeah. I think it might be 50 out of 50, but maybe that's changed.
I think there's one state where it's legal, but I might be wrong.
Yeah.
Because of that, this gives an interesting window into these people who kind of have to retreat into the shadows and are always watching their back for the law.
Yeah.
This also, of course, happens to be moonshine country. So I would imagine that there are probably generations of almost innate distrust of authority.
Yeah. 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 I think you're absolutely right.
And since the 2016 election, there's been a lot of talk about white working class America in places like West Virginia or the Rust Belt in Ohio and so forth, people who feel left out, overlooked, passed over. It would seem that the people that they're describing are the people in this film. Part of what drives people to retreat from mainstream society and find their tribe in these sort of fringe groups like this. Do you think that's where that comes from in some way?
Well, I think the only way that I can speak to that is that we should all endeavor on both sides of the political conversation or your political ideology to understand mm-hmm. And to empathize with another person's struggle. You don't have to agree with it, but you should endeavor to live a life of curiosity. And a part of that is deeply understanding things which you don't understand. The same thing can be said about the LGBT community, in an urban environment, Christians have been marginalized, mm-hmm. On some level. And certainly this extreme kind of fringe aspect of the Christian community for a very, very, very long time. And whether you agree with it or whether you don't agree with it, at least endeavor to understand it. And that's what these writers and directors have done and what we try to do as actors.
And this film takes place in a strictly patriarchal society. But I read at some point that you kind of grew up in the opposite of that, something of a bohemian matriarchy in your family.
I did.
How much did that influence your path in life?
Oh, God. I think it has been one of the biggest kind of contributing factor, mm-hmm. Growing up around a bunch of really strong women that did it for themselves. Mm-hmm. It is really kind of made me who I am today. I think that this movie, Them That Follow, by its very nature, is set in a patriarchal society, but I think that the meaning behind it and the decision that the central female hero, if you will, the story, Mara, played by Alice Engel, who plays my daughter, mm-hmm. the decision that she has to make is very much in line with the national conversation that we're having right now.
Mm-hmm. And she's just terrific in it.
She really is terrific. And what I think maybe this is, you know, I think my interpretation of a number of the characters that I've had an opportunity to play have been influenced in a very positive way by my rearing by women, by mm-hmm. a very strong, colorful, at times dysfunctional, highly functioning, dysfunctional, powerful women. Mm-hmm. That there is a real need to empathize with the people that I've had an opportunity to play.
Yeah.
And Lemuel is no different. And I just wanted to make that struggle really difficult, that decision very difficult for the female kind of lead of this story. Yeah. And I know that the community will inevitably say, run, you need to go. But I wanted to also have them say, but don't go. You know, there's a small part of their heart really want her to stay mm-hmm. because her father cares for her so deeply.
Yeah.
It's not misguided. His the way in which he goes about it might be misguided.
Right.
But his love for his daughter isn't. Yeah. It's pure.
Yeah, and I have to confess that I am also a huge fan of Vice Principals. You're so mm-hmm. good in that.
Thank you, Lee Russell.
Yeah, you're one of those actors who seems to be able to drift seamlessly between drama and comedy. I won't ask if you prefer one over the other, but do you think that one comes more naturally to you than the other?
You know, it all depends on the writing, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, if you have good writing, then it is always without effort, you know? And I think that if Jim Gaffigan were sitting in here, or certainly Danny McBride were sitting in here, they would tell you that comedy is very serious. Mm-hmm. And people have said that, comedians have said that for a very long time. And that's the only way in which I can approach it. And at the end of the day, I don't look at it as playing different characters. I look at it as playing a human being, and you just turn yourself over to an imaginary set of circumstances. So if it's funny, well, it's funny because the story is funny, you know, and you're not going for a joke. It's just situationally it's funny. And the same for drama. You don't have to imbue drama into a dramatic situation, you know, and you don't have to imbue comedy into a comedic situation. Life is the way that it is. And when I leave you today, or when you leave this studio today, inevitably something dramatic will happen in your life over the course of the next couple hours, and something very funny will happen in your life over the course of the next hours. We're all living a comedic, dramatic life simultaneously.
Yeah. Yeah, well, now you've got me excited for lunch.
Look at there.
Who knows?
Let's see what this chicken salad has in store.
Well, once again, you're just great in this role in Them That Follow, and it's been a real pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, Walton Goggins.
Thanks for talking
with
me.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're going to take a quick break, and then when I return, I'll talk with Walton Goggins' co-star in Them That Follows, actor-comedian Jim Gaffigan, when we come back in just a minute. If there's something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals, BetterHelp Online Counseling can help. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who are specialized in issues such as depression, anxiety, relationships, trauma, anger, family conflicts, LGBT matters, grief, self-esteem, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment, and get help at your own time and at your own pace. Anything you share is confidential, and it's so convenient you can schedule secure video or phone sessions, as well as chat and text with your therapist. If for some reason you're not happy with your counselor, though, you can request a new one at any time for no additional charge. Best of all, it's a truly affordable option. Kick-Ass News listeners even get 10% off your first month with the discount code KICK. So why not get started today? Go to BetterHelp.com/kick. Then simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor you'll love. That's BetterHelp.com/kick. It's summertime, and summer is prime ice cream season. In my house, a backyard barbecue or a day by the pool just isn't complete without a cone or a bowl of Ben & Jerry's. For me, it has to be chocolate chip cookie dough or chocolate fudge brownie. My wife's go-to is a Ben & Jerry's classic, Cherry's Garcia, And it's not just great on a hot summer day. I'll admit that I've been known to sneak into the freezer for a little midnight treat sometimes. I like to leave it out for a minute or so to get soft, and then I work my way around the edge of the pint as the sides melt. That's the only way to do it, folks. You gotta go outside in. Once I even got caught enjoying Ben & Jerry's for breakfast. Chocolate chip cookie dough on a waffle with some syrup, now that's how to start your morning. The way I see it, whether it's morning, afternoon, or late at night, when the temperatures rise, there's just no wrong time for a few scoops of Ben & Jerry's. Treat yourself to your favorite flavor anywhere ice cream is sold, or find a new favorite at benjerry.com. That's benjerry.com. And now, back to the podcast. I'm happy to welcome Jim Gaffigan back to the show. Jim has a new comedy special coming up mid-August, but first he plays a devout Pentecostal snake handler who has a crisis of faith in them that follow. Jim, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me back.
And now, Jim, I don't want to make any judgments on you, but I can't imagine that you're any more comfortable with snakes than I am. What was that like, having a snake for a scene partner?
Well, a snake? I was pleasantly surprised that it was more comfortable than I thought. I mean, it also, there was a snake handler there who was like, this one doesn't bite. This one's not poisonous. And they are relatively beautiful creatures. So it was kind of surprising. I'm not saying I want to own a snake. But, you know, it helps when someone's like, this is not poisonous or this has been defanged or whatever.
Yeah, that helps a lot.
It helps a lot.
Yeah. Now, you and your wife are devout Catholics and your religion often figures into your comedy. Did that in any way inform your approach to how this film portrays this particular sect?
Well, it's interesting because I don't feel what I responded to in reading the script was that Dan and Britt, who wrote and directed this film, are not bashing these people as naive. It was not kind of an anti, the movie's not anti-Pentecostal or anti-person of faith. The movie is a story about a son and a daughter, you know, of two different parent groups of parents that are kind of like finding their way in, they're finding their own identity, which, yeah, I mean, their faith is a pretty important element of this movie, but it's not about that. It could be, you know, parallel of this story could be, you know, two kids finding their way and both the parents are atheists and they're struggling with maybe they might be people of faith. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a generational kind of look at things. And it's also fascinating because these snake healing Pentecostal communities are so, out of necessity, so closed off from the outside world.
You know, I know that you came to Catholicism because of your wife, and you've jokingly referred to her as a Shiite Catholic.
Yeah.
What would you do if she came home and decided to become a Shiite Pentecostal and suddenly said, we got to prove our faith by handling a bunch of rattlesnakes?
No, it's, you know, I don't know. I mean, she's, you know, I lived across from this Catholic church that I eventually got married in. I lived across from it for 15 years and never went in. So there is something. She probably does. She would have a big influence, and I am open to ideas, but I don't know if I would go that far.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, I'm all for freedom of religion and respect all faiths and all that. But, you know, the question is, where do you draw the line?
It
is what point do you say something's a little bit crazy? Let's be honest.
Yeah, it is. It's fascinating, but it's also, you know, everyone's kind of individual belief systems, whether they're religious or not, are to someone else insane.
Right, right. But, you know, when you involve young people, children, I mean, there's also a certain responsibility for their safety. And
of course.
I think you get into that because your character actually has a bit of a crisis of faith involving his own son who's been bit by one of these snakes.
Yeah, it's, there is, you know, it was, it was really fun as an actor to, I mean, I arrived and then the next day I had to do something incredibly dramatic. And, you know, I am a parent, so I accessed a lot of these emotions. Not that any actor couldn't, but it was pretty profound. I mean, it's, you know, being a parent is such a strange thing because you can kind of like expose your children to a lot of things, but there's nature and nurture. Mm-hmm. And so there's some nurture, but there's some nature, you mm-hmm. know. So that's really what I think also yeah. is addressed in this movie.
Yeah, religion has kind of been a theme throughout your career. You've gone from opening for the Pope
yeah.
to now doing a Pentecostal snake handler.
Yeah.
Makes me wonder what's going to be next in your religious repertoire.
I know. Well, maybe I'll play the Pope in a movie.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
I'd like to
right?
see that.
Right?
I mean, personally, I would like to see you play the world's most Nordic rabbi.
Right. Or I could be JP
Someone
too.
Could
I could
that.
Be John Paul II, right?
Yeah.
I'd probably have to lose weight.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was blonde and
he
all that.
He was blonde,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. I could totally see that.
And he at the end he was doing a lot of sleeping.
Right.
So I could do a lot
okay,
of sleeping.
Okay, so you could play the old Pope.
Not yeah, I could
not
play the
one,
old
not
Pope.
Not when he was like Olympic skier practically.
Yeah. No, he was like very theatrical.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was yeah. doing plays.
This film premiered during Sundance. You've actually, I think, had three films premiering
yeah.
at Sundance this year. You were also back at South by Southwest. You're kind of become a fixture on the film festival circuit these days, huh?
It is. I mean, I really enjoy acting, but selfishly, what I'm most excited about, obviously, you work hard on these films and you want people to see them, but I selfishly also want film directors and producers mm-hmm. to see me doing some dramatic acting because
yeah.
I in the end the entertainment industry is very much, you know, they're relatively risk averse. You know, they don't want to hire someone
yeah.
that can't do it.
Yeah.
They want someone that's going to show up, add some value, and be a good partner. And so with every appearance at a film festival, that's what I'm mostly excited about
yeah.
is someone seeing a director or a producer seeing my work. It's very exciting.
Is it a totally different experience for you doing film festivals versus comedy festivals like Just for Laughs?
Oh yeah, they're dramatically different experiences. Comedy festivals are much more of a... I feel like they're kind of like a convention that, you know, maybe pipe fitters might have a convention. So comedy festivals are kind of like a convention of comedians. When I go to comedy festivals, I'm usually just excited because I can hang around other comedians.
Mm-hmm.
Because touring constantly, I don't get to hang out. And being the father of five, I don't get to hang out like I used to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good time to kind of meet up with people
yeah.
that... You know, and many of them have enormous success in their touring. So
yeah.
it's good for us to kind yeah. of get together and hang out.
Yeah, it must feel like there's a lot less pressure because with a film festival, most of the time you're trying to sell that movie and get
yeah.
distribution. So there's a lot of pressure there.
Yeah,
huh?
And there
yeah.
is, I mean, I you know, film festivals are interesting because they're also, you know, like it feels like every minute of your day is scheduled.
Yeah,
doing press, doing
okay.
this, there's a dinner. I mean, it's all fun, but it's all kind of very well orchestrated. Like, you know,
yeah.
you go to Sundance and you get your picture taken more than you've ever gotten your picture taken in your life. So it's a strange kind of
yeah.
experience.
Yeah, it must be weird to think that you probably have more photos of you with total strangers floating around than the entirety of all the photos you've ever taken with your family.
Oh, yeah. And really high quality
yeah.
photos.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
yeah. Well, can you picture yourself going to Cannes and doing the red carpet?
I would love to go to Cannes. I'm not... You know, the red carpet and all that stuff, there is something that gives me the willies about that. It's
yeah.
just kind of, it's similar to the Met Ball, you know. It's like, it just, you know, there's something kind of, it bumps me a little bit. Just because maybe I come from a small town and
mm-hmm.
that just feels like, I don't know if we're supposed
yeah.
to do that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm just, like, it's like how in touch with... humility are we if we're putting on $8,000
right.
prom dresses?
Yeah,
you know
it's
I mean?
All about celebrating the celebrity of everything instead
yeah.
of the thing that you made that you're there to show to other people.
And I
that
know that there's
about,
other things behind it.
Yeah.
It might be kind of how society interprets it that where it gets lost in that.
Yeah.
But I just feel like You know, as a comedian and a writer and kind of an actor, I don't want to be in high school. I don't want to like be constantly in this. And it's probably why I live in New York rather than LA.
Is that
I don't want to be. I want to separate myself from the rat race and not get caught up in where I am on the thing, because I'll go crazy.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you have been a busy, busy man. I remember last time I talked to you, I think you had something like 9 movies in the can.
Yeah.
How many movies have you done over the past year at this point?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot that are coming out, but some of it is, again, I would much have preferred that, those 10 movies were spaced out over 5 years, but you don't have control over when opportunities come.
Right.
And I'm grateful for the opportunities, but, I don't know. It's so fun. It's so fun. Yeah. Like, in Them That Follow, I play this guy Zeke, who's, this guy who's, married to Olivia Colman, whose son is Thomas Mann, and we're dealing with this kind of crisis of faith. It's just so fun.
Yeah, you're taking on a lot of challenging roles. I mean, I don't think that I would have ever pictured you playing a Pentecostal snake handler. I don't know where this is set. I guess it's kind of left to the imagination.
Yeah, it's kind of on the
Ohio, West Virginia,
Appalachia kind of area.
Yeah. Yeah, you're playing a lot of these serious roles these days. Has it been hard to convince casting directors and directors that the Hot Pocket guy can do drama?
Well, it's obviously working now, but it's something that I definitely wanted to do in my 20s and 30s. But and it's the more you get these opportunities to show that you can kind of climb into a character and really kind of service a story and a director's vision, hopefully that'll lead to other roles,
Yeah, yeah, because if you're not the Hot Pocket guy now going into acting and all that, before that, you were the guy who shits with the door open. So it's like you've always got something that you're trying to...
This is a perception business, and you don't really have that much control over the takeaway. I'm a comedian who has done 7 specials around varying topics, and some people are like, oh, you're the food comic, and I'm like, but 70% of the material is not about food,
right?
But you don't have control over that perception. And in some ways, focusing on just creating or doing roles is all I can control, and opening up, so maybe some people seeing me in Them That Follow or An American Dreamer or seeing a special on Amazon will open them up to a different viewpoint.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think today it's a lot more fluid between acting and comedy. It used to be that comedians, were just dying to get a sitcom or get a movie and then just say goodbye to stand-up forever. And now it seems like you can kind of go back and forth and do both.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I've been doing stand-up for a long time, and I was on a couple sitcoms, and I already moved towards single cameras kind of when I was doing a lot of TV, but now I'm kind of, the character or the story has to be really interesting. So I find myself turning down stuff that I think that would kind of surprise people. They're like, why wouldn't you want to do that? I'm like, because having worked on That 70s Show for a couple seasons, I know what it's like to walk into a scene with the most famous person in the country and have the audience erupt. And it's like, that doesn't feel like acting to me. Whereas doing a small indie where you're there for the right reason, the director's there for the right reason, everyone on the crew's there for the right reason, that's feels more like acting to me.
By the way, and I feel like I should just jump in here and clarify that when I say, you being known as the man who shits with the door open, I'm referring to a very specific episode of Sex and the City. Yeah. This is not your life.
That wasn't something I just did on the wild.
Now, do you think that being a comedian informs your acting, or vice versa? Does acting inform your comedy?
Oh, yeah. No, I think they're definitely very different disciplines, but, you know, understanding, you know, character and situation is something that I learned in stand-up. Mm-hmm. And I think that concentration is a big element of both of them.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
And, you know, being organic in the moment. So, like, the material is really important, but the intention or the character is more important. So people, you know, with stand-up, you know, seeing, you know, my, you know, this special that's coming to Amazon, it's important for people to, it's not just the jokes. It's about some of the evolving of the conversation I have with the audience. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, I'm challenging them, but I'm also not completely reinventing myself. And that's the same that you have to, you know, when you build a character, it has to be multidimensional.
Yeah, and speaking of challenging yourself, in the last special, you opened up about a lot of personal things because your wife had a brain tumor and had a long recovery with that, and that was a big scare for you. Are you dealing with similar material in the next special?
Well, there is some of, there is, you know, once you, you know, what was so great about, or a great takeaway from the experience of my wife having this near-death experience was these tools of making things funny that I had used for 20 years in stand-up. I was now using them for this personal crisis in my life. And so once you learn a skill set in stand-up, you don't really lose it. So I'm not discussing life or death things, but I am kind of boldly talking about more autobiographical things.
Yeah, because I imagine it's hard to go back.
Yeah, it is
hard
to go
backward from that.
But there is, you know, like some of it is almost a larger discussion of we live in a voyeuristic kind of exhibitionist age where you have to expose a little bit. That's some of the social contract of social media, and also in stand-up, you know, like in the 80s, you never learned anything about Jerry Seinfeld, but now you really, you know, when someone watches a special, they want to learn something about you.
Right, right.
And if they're not learning something, it seems rather impersonal.
Yeah, between social media and podcasts and everything, I feel like it's almost like the audience demands to have a little bit of a personal relationship with the comedian.
And it comes down to authenticity. Mm-hmm. I think that's what people crave. Yeah. They crave an authenticity, whether it be in acting or in stand-up. Yeah. You know, obviously when it comes to stand-up, it's got to be funny.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is a big deal because this is Amazon's first comedy special.
It is Amazon's first. And it'll be exciting because Amazon obviously is this monolith that probably everyone listening to this right now has an Amazon box in their room.
Right.
But there's also a lot of questions. I don't know because I do international shows, so it'll be fun to see the reach because Amazon is bigger in Germany than Netflix, bigger than bigger in India than Netflix, bigger than in the UK than Netflix. So it'll be interesting to see what impact the Amazon
definitely
platform will have.
Yeah. Well, before we go, real quickly, I just have to ask, how's Jeannie doing? I know that she was
She's doing
a lot of recovery.
She's doing well. She has a book coming out in on October 1st. So she's spent the past year really, you know, the recovery from a brain tumor is not something that occurs.
And definitely.
It's not like getting over a cold.
Yeah.
But so she's, during that recovery, she's written this great book, which is really funny, that kind of talks about what she's learned from that experience. But
good,
I think people
her.
Will really like it.
Yeah, I hope to have her on.
Yeah.
Well, look for Jim in Them That Follow, opening in theaters August 2nd, and his new comedy special Quality Time premieres on Amazon Prime Video August 16th. Jim, it's always fun.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks again to Jim Gaffigan and Walton Goggins for coming on the show. Them That Follow opens in theaters Friday, August 2nd.
Also, look for Walton Goggins in HBO's new limited series, The Righteous Gemstones, August 18th, and Jem's new comedy special, Quality Time, on Amazon Prime Video, beginning August 16th. And follow Jem on Twitter at Jem Gaffigan. Whatever struggles you're facing, from depression and anxiety to trauma and grief, BetterHelp can connect you with a professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. It's so convenient, you can schedule secure video or phone sessions, as well as chat and text with your therapist. And anything you share is completely confidential. Best of all, it's a truly affordable option. Kick-Ass News listeners even get 10% off your first month with the discount code KICK. So why not get started? Simply go to betterhelp.com/kick and fill out a questionnaire to get matched with a counselor you'll love today. That's betterhelp.com/kick. Folks, you know, when I sit down to binge watch my favorite TV show or catch the newest episode, it's always better with a pint of Ben & Jerry's. My wife's favorite TV time treat is a classic, Cherry's Garcia. And for me, it's got to be chocolate fudge brownie or chocolate chip cookie dough. Because really, they're like getting two desserts in one. You get ice cream and brownies, or ice cream and chocolate chip cookies. What's better than that? So cozy up with your favorite flavor, available anywhere ice cream is sold. Or find a new favorite at benjerry.com. That's BenJerry.com. Be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on Apple Podcasts if you haven't already. And if you like what you're hearing, then rate and review us while you're there. 5-star reviews are the easiest way for new listeners to find us. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Kick-Ass News Pod. And feel free to email me with your thoughts, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. Until next time, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.